The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very, very good morning. How are you doing?
Well, I was listening to Zanati's comment about being a Rhodes student. So you need to be careful what you say about people who come from that part of the world. Although I have to go with you on the canned wine thing. I'm very unsure about it, I have to say.
We're homies.
Oh, yeah. So there we go. The two of you, both Rhodes students. Wow. Well, there you have it. All right. So now I need to be careful. Either way, let's see how this wine thing plays out. I think it's going to be cool. The Let's Talk Coalition update. Parties have acknowledged that they are in talks, but that large gaps remain. Is there room for optimism?
Well, I think the fact that they've acknowledged that there are talks going on, I think is good news. While there's talk, there's hope. But of course, the report that came out made it very, very clear that the optimism needs to be somewhat tempered, because in fact, the report that I read even went as far as saying there's political deadlock. After the negotiating teams had met, there's a positive atmosphere. It was very serious. It was very businesslike. All of these very nice kind of fluffy, loose terms are being used to suggest that, you know, everybody's very friendly, but we have no agreement. And in fact, the report says that huge gaps still remain between the parties, even though further talks are due to be taking place in the coming days. And there still seems to be a lot of focus on the whole legal process surrounding Prime Minister Netanyahu, and more focus on the leaks that have come out from the legal process, which officially were not supposed to have been made public, or at least certain details of the legal process were not supposed to be made public. And there seems to be a little bit of a witch hunt going on, actually, to try and find who was responsible for leaking these. This is really being led mostly by the Netanyahu legal team, wanting to know who within the Justice Ministry would have been responsible for making public some of the things that are going on that should really have been remained, should have been kept under wraps and should not have been released to the general public. There is a real, I have a dilemma in my mind about whether this information should be made public or not. On the one hand, Netanyahu is a private citizen like every other Israeli, and he has the right to remain private to the same extent that every other citizen has that right under the law. And so to the extent that he's undergoing any legal investigation, any legal proceedings, he, I think, should have the same right as everybody else. Having said that, he is the prime minister, and his legal case definitely affects the future of this country and the future government of this country. And so the question is, does the general public have the right to know simply because he is the prime minister, rather than in spite of the fact that he's the prime minister? I, in my own mind, I'm not sure about that, because I do believe in everybody's rights under the law, equal rights under the law, no matter who you are. But we have to acknowledge that this is a very, very substantial issue for our country. And so there is a little thing somewhere in my mind which says maybe we do, as a general public, have the right to know what's going on. Although at the moment, the general public have nothing really to say about it. I mean, the fact, the issue is out of their hands. This is something that's going on within the passages of government. And so there is a further question as to whether this information does need to be out there, known to those people who are in the process of negotiating to the formation of the coalition. I'm not sure what the answer is, because I fall on both sides of the fence here. I guess everybody out there will have their own view or views about this particular issue.
And I'd love your thoughts on 34519 or 0618951019. This is also a fairly controversial one, and that's the Israel's High Court of Justice has ruled to deport an official representing Human Rights Watch in Israel. On what ground was the deportation order issued?
Okay, so this is an interesting decision by three justices from the High Court of Justice who ruled on Tuesday that an official from Human Rights Watch, someone called Omar Shakir, will be deported. The government has the right to deport him from Israel on the basis of work that he's been doing, which really speaks against Israel, supporting BDS, if you like, supporting the boycott on Israel. And it's interesting that the work that he's been doing has really all been Twitter-based. All of his comments, all of his activities, all of his negative comments about Israel seem to have been focused on Twitter. And he's, you know, particularly been, he's been trying to encourage people not to invest in Israel. He called on FIFA, he's called on Airbnb, he's called on Bookings.com to boycott Israel because of what he calls Israel's poor human rights record. And so this is a man who is actually based in Israel, who is using social media to trash Israel, for want of a better word, within the social media sphere. And this issue has gone to the High Court of Justice for them to decide, and they've decided that the government is fully within its rights to deport him because of this activity. And I actually had hoped to speak to Howard Saxteen about this yesterday. We had other things to discuss, obviously, but I know that he has quite strong views on things like this. And I'm just interested to know what people out there think about, you know, Israel's democracy, and whether this interferes in any way with Israel's democracy, whether we have the right to say to people that if you're going to come here and you're going to damage our economy and you're going to speak things which are potentially not necessarily true. I mean, all of these are subject to some personal view and some interpretation. If you're going to say things like that, should the Israeli government have the right to deport you? And more than that, is it actually damaging for the High Court of Justice? Does it damage our democracy? Does it damage the way in which the international community perceive Israel if the High Court of Justice and the government come to this view that individuals like this should not be allowed to remain in Israel? It's not for the first time that our High Court of Justice is discussing this particular matter. In fact, there was a ruling back in 2015 where 9 justices of the High Court of the High Court of Justice ruled on this issue, and there was a 5-4 majority once again in favor of the deportation. But interestingly, in that case, there was this distinction drawn between activities in the beyond the green line as opposed to activities within the green line. And that was a key issue that was raised in that 2015 case, something that was not mentioned at all during the case that was ruled upon on Tuesday. And so, you know, I hold the view that every country in the world has borders. And when you arrive at a country as a foreigner, they are entitled to say to you at the border, I'm sorry, we're not allowing you in for a myriad of any reason that they can choose to cite. We think that you're going to work illegally. We think you're going to cause trouble. Football supporters who have a record of violence or of behaving badly are not allowed to travel abroad to watch football games. So every country in the world does draw a line around its borders and does prevent people who are troublemakers in any sort of way from entering into the country. Does Israel have the right to do that to people like this who come in with the specific motive of damaging our economy, damaging Israel's face in the public, in the wider broader international community? I'm interested to hear what people think about that.
Mm. And absolutely, 34519 or 061-895-1019. I've long held the belief that I think it's a poor decision by Israel to block so many people from, well, not so many, to block certain people from coming to see Israel. This case I do see as different, because if he's got a responsibility, he's working for United Nations Human Rights Watch, and he is unable to be unbiased, and he has shown his bias in a tremendous way, then he has absolutely no right, in my view, to be there. So I do think that given his position, he shouldn't be allowed to represent the United Nations in Israel. I think that it's an absolutely appalling thing. And in fact, the only measure that Israel has got and the only defense Israel has got against the United Nations that has shown its bias, its anti-Israel bias over and over and over again. And the examples are countless how many times they've done that. The only weapon that Israel has is to say, look, we're not going to allow somebody who is openly against it, against this country, why should we allow them in? And I think that's in this case. I do think it's different to a person, for example, who might be a supporter of BDS, let's say here in South Africa or around the world, just because they got became caught up in a movement as a university student and then wants to go to Israel. I do think that is a different case. And I'm still not comfortable with Israel adopting the attitude of stopping those types of people from coming in. But in this case, I would fully endorse it. I'd love our listeners' thoughts, though. 34519 or 0618951019.
Sorry, I'm interrupting your numbers. What I wanted to say about the whole human rights side of the work that people do is that when you talk about people representing Human Rights Watch organizations, on the one hand, I do believe that, you know, these organizations have a place in our society,
that
countries and places need to be called out. However, having said that, we have to accept that when a human rights organization goes to a country for the purpose of monitoring human rights, the chances are that they're not going to say, hey, you guys are doing a really, really great job. I'm glad we came here to monitor the human rights of this country, of this particular region. Well done. All human rights.
Yes, but I don't think you're expecting that. I don't think that Israel is without blame in every single situation. And of course it's not. It's a country made up of individuals, and individuals misbehave. So I think that they have a very important role to play. But if the underlying assumption is that Israel is a human rights abuser and they support, and that person supports the ultimate destruction of the country through various means, then I can't see them being able to represent the United Nations effectively.
I hear what you're saying. I think my point that I wanted to make was about the bias that you mentioned of these individuals, of this individual in particular. And I think my point is that a person who comes here with a particular role of monitoring human rights under an organization, whether it be Human Rights Watch or any other organization, one has to assume that they have a certain bias to begin with, because their role is to come and call that country out on its human rights abuses. And that's why they're there in the first place. Otherwise, Human Rights Watch wouldn't bother coming to Israel. But they've come here because they have some sort of a pretext that there are human rights abuses taking place. The people who are being sent, so-called biased or unbiased, however you wish to term them, people who are being sent here are being sent with that job. They're not coming to say, well done, you've done a great job. They're coming here to find where these human rights abuses are taking place and to call people out. So I think from the very, very outset, people who come with human rights organizations to monitor human rights from one angle or another, generally speaking, have a certain bias that's kind of built in, that's associated with them from the beginning. Otherwise, they wouldn't be there at all, right?
Absolutely. It's very interesting, and I would love your thoughts. Kate says that, yes, Israel is correct to deport them. Why should they allow such a person to live in their country? And Clive says they come in under the guise of human rights, but they come to destroy Israel. Look, I'm not sure if they do come
I think that's a fair comment, by the way, Howard.
Do you?
That is a fair comment. I mean, I think people who come in under the guise of human rights may well have a hidden agenda, and, you know, the human rights monitoring gives them an opportunity to progress that agenda. And I think that that's really what this case goes to the crux of, whether that individual is really doing his job as a human rights monitor or whether he's coming here under the blanket, under the umbrella of being a human rights monitor and is actually pursuing an agenda which is really not human rights based at all,
right,
which I think is a very fair comment.
Jonathan says, as a representative of the UN, he had the responsibility of sending the correct message without his personal feelings towards the state. We have our own human rights issues in South Africa, but you don't see them calling for the state's destruction. And I think that's a valid point as well.
Good comment.
Yeah.
Good
Unfortunately, it is 8 o'clock. This is where we love and leave you. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. Thank you for a great week of reporting.